Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today's show topic is aquatic animal husbandry, a.k.a. aquarium science, aquarium building and caring for slippery sea creatures of all kinds, from fish tanks in your home to massive underwater displays at aquariums. It's a fascinating, and I'm told by our experts here today, quite addictive topic. Now to introduce our fish fanciers. All three are active members of the Pioneer Valley Aquarium Society. E. Michael Silikowski is a former president and current board member. He was hooked after receiving a teacup full of guppies at age 5. He went on to earn a degree in zoology and a stint in the Peace Corps Aquaculture Unit and is currently pursuing a master's degree in environmental science at the University of Massachusetts. Jacob Winasso is vice president of the Pioneer Valley Aquarium Society and also a lifelong aquarium and fish fancier. He has 10 aquariums in his home. Wow. He specializes in the creation of underwater plant environments. And Tony Guy is an East African and New World cichlid specialist who has built a 135-gallon South American cichlid tank in his dorm at the University at Albany, where he's earning his Ph.D. in physics. He got into the aquarium hobby during college, looking to pursue a hobby that blended science and art. So if you're a fish fancier, do you have a fish tank or some questions about aquatic life? This is the time to call. Help me out here. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. And you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But we do love your calls, 1-800-348-2551. With all that said, Tony, Jacob, and Michael, welcome to the show. Nice to have you guys here.
Well, thank you, Ray. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's very exciting, and I know that I don't know much about this topic. We did have a fish bowl once, and the cat ate the fish. So that's the extent of my knowledge. But, you know, how did you, well, we'll start with you, Michael. How did you start with this, with 5 guppies?
Well, actually, no. I was 5 years old, and I was given a teacup full of baby guppies.
Okay.
And the next day, my mom appeared with a fish bowl and a little green catfish. And after we realized that it's actually a big pain in the butt to take care of a fish bowl.
Yep.
I had a 10-gallon tank a few weeks later, and I've been a fancier ever since.
So it's much easier to have equipment that cycles water and such than having a fish bowl.
An actual aquatic ecology system sets up in the tank, and it basically almost becomes self-maintaining. As long as you do just a little bit of maintenance, it's much easier to take care of than having to put the fish under the stress of taking it out of the bowl, scrub the bowl, putting in fresh water. It's a lot more work. And the tank is just basically self-maintaining with just a little bit of effort.
You know, we found that it was very stressful for the fish when the cat ate the fish.
Some of us have had fish that would eat the cat.
Well, you see, that's what we're here to talk about today. Jacob Guinasso, 10 aquariums in your home? Really? How do you do that?
We, you know, just kind of squeeze in between them to, you know, go through our day. But
It's very relaxing looking at fish in tanks.
It is. So, you know, people have works of art on their wall, you know, things like that, and they look around. We have aquariums around, and, you know, it's a beautiful little piece of environment that you get to just watch the fish do their thing. You know, you fill it with plants, beautiful sort of aquascaping going on, and there's nothing like it. So it's something that, you know, both my wife and I enjoy, and you know, we're working on things like, you know, breeding the fish and getting that whole mechanic going. And that's a whole nother aspect of the hobby that just makes it all the more fascinating.
And there's quite a bit of science and skill involved. Some fish don't take kindly to aquarium life unless you know exactly the right temperature and everything else.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
It ranges from fish that you can't kill with a hammer to fish that will, you know, unless you know exactly what you're doing, they will turn belly up if you look at them wrong.
Yeah. So we had a betta fish. It was an enjoyable fish to watch in those brief moments that we actually had the fish. Tony Guy, you're a physics. You're getting a PhD in physics.
Yes, yes.
So how does the twain meet between a love of aquariums and physics?
Oh, well, physics really, I think, is the keystone of all science in general. And as it boils down to it, physics can be applied to just about anything. And my sophomore year of undergrad, I was just looking for something to do in my free time. School is already stressful enough as it is, so I just wanted something that was kind of relaxing that I could tinker with. I like building things, and aquariums was kind of the best alternative to amateur rocketry, which I didn't think the university wanted me to really do in my dorm.
In the current climate, it's probably not best
to fire rockets. I figured it was a nice alternative.
Yeah, that's a good plan. Yeah.
And so, yeah, it started off with, as Michael sort of started off with, a 10-gallon tank that quickly jumped to a 5-gallon and then to 29-gallon and just kind of exploded from there. And as you said earlier, it's definitely an addictive hobby, but it's addictive in a good way. It lets you mix science. If you don't want to worry so much about the science, you can focus on other things. There's really something in there for just about anyone.
So you are a New World cichlid specialist. What does that mean?
Well, cichlids are... It's the largest family of fish, freshwater fish. And... what I like about cichlids is they are some of the most colorful fish, the most, they've got the best attitude, I guess you could say.
What do you mean?
Well, there's quite a range in temperament. You can get some that are pretty docile, like Libidochromis coralius, yellow lab cichlids. If you go to the pet store, they're one of the most common cichlids. They're from the Rift Lakes of Africa, mainly Lake Malawi. You can also get... fish like I'm also keeping Metrochlema elongatus, which they're a lot more feisty.
You keep them all together?
Yeah.
And they get along?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that comes with a little bit of trial and error. What I found with you started off with New World cichlids, but I'm jumping back to the Old World, which entails cichlids from the continent of Africa. But I'm keeping in a 55-gallon a school of Metrochlema elongatus and yellow labs. And what I found that keeping a larger population, so instead of maybe two or three of these cichlids, keep a larger number. And that way, the more aggressive fish, the dominant one, won't find the weakest one, won't find the low guy in the totem pole.
Yeah.
And pick on him until he, goes belly up.
Yeah.
It kind of spreads out the aggression and it's actually works out quite nicely. And, of course, when you have a whole bunch of fish all together, it looks a little bit more exciting as well. Now, the New World cichlids, that's just pertaining to cichlids from... the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
And so that entails things like Oscars, angelfish, as well as just hundreds and hundreds of other different species. It's definitely a large group of fish and definitely very exciting to explore.
Now, Oscars like to eat fish. I've seen this. In college, somebody had an Oscar and a goldfish would go in occasionally and that goldfish was gone. So how do you make that work?
Well, my ex-wife used to make meatloaf, and the Oscar always got the first slice.
Well, all right. So do you do that as well, Tony, make meatloaf for the Oscars?
No, I'm not quite that good of a cook yet.
No.
But it's definitely something that you can even experiment making your own fish food. So that's where the science comes in again. You can start mixing up your own foods. There's all sorts of things
you can
do.
Plankton and kelp and
whatnot. Yep, plankton, kelp, spirulina, sometimes shrimp, things like that. You can all mix in beef.
Of course, experimenting isn't the best idea. Some of these fish are not cheap. If you experiment incorrectly, then it's money out the window, right?
Right. And so that's where some of the experience comes in, and also a little bit of common sense. If you can kind of predict what's going to happen beforehand, usually.
Right. So you don't necessarily go straight for the meatloaf.
Right.
Right.
That kind of knowledge is also gleaned from not only doing your own reading and research through books and the internet and stuff like that, but things like aquarium clubs. And we're all part of the Pioneering Valley Aquarium side where we can share that kind of information.
We talk aquatic things today, aquarium science, aquarium building with E. Michael Silikowski, Jacob Guinasso, and Tony Guy. And... amazingly enough, the phone lines are loaded, so let's go right to the calls. Matt in Pine Bush. Matt, you're on.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey.
Well, I just put together a new 10-gallon tank, and I decided to use black sand as my substrate, or my bottom. But I've never used sand before, and now I have, now that it's been pooed on, I have no idea the best way to clean it.
Ah.
I was wondering if you had any advice.
actually all of us have different tanks with completely different tones. And the one of us who is a sand specialist is Tony, so I'm going to hand that one off to Tony.
All right, Tony, the poo issue. How do you deal with it?
Well, the thing with sand as compared to something like gravel is it's definitely a lot lighter. So you have to be careful when either gravel vacuuming or something like that to remove the debris. You can still use the gravel vacuum or the siphon hose. So that's you can get them in the stores. They're oftentimes called Pythons. That's, I guess, the biggest brand of them. But they're basically just a tube that you can siphon water out of. And it acts as a hose to suck anything up off the bottom. And you just have to be careful not to jam it down so far that you're just sucking up sand. But if you're gentle enough with it, it'll definitely that'll take care of any of the debris issue on the bottom. If you plant the tank too, a lot of times you don't have to worry as much about gravel vacuum too. So that's one option to go with.
All right, Matt, thank you very much for the call. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Can't you just buy a bottom feeder and let the bottom feeder eat all that stuff?
You can to an extent, but there's really nothing better than you actually going in and removing that from the system, because that's, if you want to remove the debris, you got to get it out because it'll still be in there.
That doesn't sound like too much fun. All right, we'll take a break.
Support for WAMZ comes from Rhinebeck Artist Shops. Professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck, New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston, rhinebeckart.com. Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics, barrypricearchitecture.com. And Rensselaer County Historical Society and the Van Rensselaer Garden Club, presenting the 58th Annual Holiday Greens Show in the Hart Kluwit House tomorrow through Monday, rchs.org.
Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Ray Graff here. Now, we had a call from the legal department at the Pioneer Valley Aquarium Society. It seems E. Michael Silikowski is not a former president of the organization, and there were several people upset. So you're not. You're a board member, but not a former president.
Yes.
I want to make that clear.
Yes, that's correct, because I don't want them doing aggressive displays and possibly chase me out of my habitat.
All right, very good. All right, let's go back to the calls. And Sue in Western Mass, you're on.
Hi. I just recently bought a beta and one of those little starter beta kits. It's 1.2 gallons. And everywhere at the pet shop, and all of my friends have actually said that that's perfectly fine for a beta. But when I get on the Internet, it's almost considered a torturous situation for the fish. Can you tell me if this is a really bad thing, or is it okay, or should I upgrade?
You mean is it too small? You mean?
Yeah, that's what they imply on the Internet.
Well, that's what I think too. We had a betta fish in a small tank like that, and I said, "Well, that must be pretty boring for the betta fish." But betta fish are probably pretty dumb.
Well,
yeah, there's that.
I'll field this one. Actually, to tell you the truth, I've always kept my bettas in aquariums because. The thing is, they can handle small spaces. They basically are native to, like, puddles and rice paddies and such in Thailand. They can handle small spaces, but the main issue with them, and the reason that a lot of people don't have them live very long, is because they can handle bad water conditions. They're air breathers. They will actually drown if they don't have access to the surface. They have an auxiliary breathing apparatus for air. They're air breathers.
They have lungs?
They have what's called a labyrinth organ in the back of their throat it's basically the equivalent of a lung, and they will drown if they don't have access to air. But the main problem with keeping bettas in small containers is that you really should put it in the warmest place in your house. Mm-hmm. Remember, these creatures are native to Thailand.
Yeah.
And if they're in a house that's going to drop to 58 to 60 degrees on a regular basis in the wintertime, it's far too cold for them. And I've always kept mine in aquariums. And frankly, In aquariums where I kept the temperatures at 78 to 80 degrees, I've had entire communities of bettas, including, this is a rule that you can bend if you're careful about it. I've actually had two male bettas in the same tank.
So those are the Japanese fighting fish?
The Siamese fighting fish,
Siamese fighting fish?
I've seen once in my life the genuine Siamese fighting fish, the ones, and they're the equivalent of like Michael Vick's fighting dogs or cockfighting.
All right, fine.
But they're not generally imported. The ones that are bred in this country are ornamental bettas. They are like gorgeous little fish. The males will fight and rip each other's fins, but once a dominance order is established, I had two males that were inseparable until they both died of old age at about 3 years of age. Because one was so much bigger than the other didn't dare challenge his supremacy, and they became fast friends. But they lived to a great age because they were in a warm tank.
Okay.
And that is basically the issue.
So a small tank, not so bad, but keep it warm.
Yes, they definitely need heat.
Okay, so that's probably more information than you needed.
That was great. Thank you very much.
You're
bye-bye.
Welcome. Thanks for calling. 1-800-348-2551. We talk aquariums at Aquarium Building today. And let's go to Carrie in Durham, New York. Carrie, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I'll try and keep this as short and sweet as I can. I have a 35-gallon tank with four fantail goldfish in it. Two of them are medium size, probably 2 to 3 inches, and the other two are smaller, 1.5 inch. And I'm having trouble with my water quality. I get a lot of nitrates, and my pH tends to stay high. I think I'm doing everything I'm supposed to. I do partial water changes fairly frequently. I siphon the gravel. I have live plants. I have a biofilter. I add natural bacteria. Any suggestions? Do I have too many fish? What do I do?
What size tank is this again?
35 gallons.
Well, I can try and take this one, I think. One thing that I know about goldfish is they are very messy in general. They're very similar to cichlids. When you feed them, they're kind of pooping machines to begin with. And so they will make the water quality a lot more worse more quickly than many other tropical fish. So you're going to be a little bit on the disadvantage trying to keep the water clean in that regard. So you will have to do a little bit more than the standard standard treatment. One thing that I would also suggest is you might want to invest in something like a canister filter. Now, as compared to a regular hang-on-the-back filter, a canister filter is generally a lot more powerful. It's a chamber that it'll siphon water out of the tank, clean it in this chamber, and then put it back in the tank. It's a way that you can not only increase the amount of water in a system, but also increase the amount of media you can put into to allow the bacteria and stuff to grow in the tank.
Okay.
Okay. Because I'm actually thinking of replacing the tank because it's over a dozen years old and it's starting to, get tired.
Yep.
So I should look for one that has a better filter system, canister.
That would be something that you would add on extra. So you can check online. There are a lot of good sources. Also, check your local fish store. You can talk to them. Usually they would have a good idea as to or at least point you in the right direction as to what the next step would take. If you're looking to upgrade the tank, I suggest going as big as you possibly can, because more water means the water quality will drop down much less quickly. So it's definitely something that would help you out in that regard.
I did want to say one thing, because I have had goldfish tanks in the past. They aren't tropicals. They're cold water fish. And as such, they need more space. They need a higher oxygen content. Plus, they are like the aquatic equivalent of cattle or pigs. They really they eat and they poop. And
Okay. Well, Carrie, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. This is taking an ugly turn. I didn't realize it would. Ed in Pittsfield. Ed, you're on.
Yes. Hi. I'm working with small aquatic habitats, water bases in the range of below a gallon down to some as small as like 8 to 10 ounces. And what I was hoping that you guys help me with. I do my water changes intuitively in the vases. I have aquatic plants. I have cuttings. And for creatures, I have snails and dwarf shrimp or guppies. And for the larger ones, I'm doing water changes once a week, about 70% of the water. And for down to the very smallest ones, they have the dwarf shrimp in them, and I'm doing water changes daily, like 70%. But I've sometimes spread it out to as much as 3 days. But is there a good way for me to check the water to know whether I can extend those water changes out further? Hello?
Absolutely. Yeah, don't all jump at once. The panel is considering your question, Ed.
Oh, very good. I'm sorry. I didn't know if I'd lost you.
No, there's absolutely ways to test your water quality to know, you know, how long it takes for your water to deteriorate before you actually need to change the water. So, as mentioned earlier, nitrates are a good indicator. Generally, through the nitrogen cycle, as you know, fish produce ammonia and waste, it converts down to nitrates, and those build up. And you know, as they get higher and higher, that's what you want to make sure to keep low, do the water changes, keep that low. And then another indicator would be the total dissolved solids. You can find TDS meters. If you happen to come across one of those, they are a great way to keep an eye on your water quality, especially with the shrimps. That's something you want to keep an eye on and find out, you know, what your particular shrimp really need for their total dissolved solids. And you know, if it gets too high, then you do a water change. And yeah, that's the basic way to look at it.
I do it intuitively with the fish. It's easy for me to see if the fish are distressed at all. Shrimp, I'm not as good at looking at a shrimp and saying, gee, he's not happy.
Okay.
If a shrimp is molting, he's happy. So if you see the exoskeletons laying around the bowls,
it's a happy shrimp.
Then it's a happy
and a tasty
shrimp,
right?
Absolutely.
All right, Ed, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
So is it common for people to have very micro environments with 8, 9, 10 ounces of water?
Absolutely.
Is this something you guys have heard of?
Surprisingly so. I mean, that's one of the things about joining an aquarium club is you meet people who are doing all manner of different things. This was always a very solitary hobby for me for 50 years, and then I blundered into the aquarium club by accident and found all these people of like mind but doing all manner of different things. And I was absolutely amazed at how many people are keeping shrimp, nano fish, which are, you know, I've seen fish, people with tanks of fish that were 5/8 of an inch long.
Yeah.
And there's just so much out there, and I was amazed at how many people are keeping shrimp.
That's amazing. All right, let's go to line 5 and Kerry in Plainfield. Kerry, you're on.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Hi.
I have a quick question for your guest. Years ago when I was in the Navy, I did a lot of diving in the Navy, and when I dive off of Guam, this isn't a question about aquariums but the open ocean, I would see moray eels quite often, and they were pretty large and rather intimidating looking. Are they dangerous to humans?
Oh, well, I can try and answer that one. I have no clue, actually, but I don't think they would be, they shouldn't be all that dangerous. I mean, I saw a video of a few weeks ago of a woman being hugged by this moray eel, so that was kind of interesting. And I don't know,
hugged? Excuse me, they have arms?
Well, sort of. I mean, it was kind of wrapping around her, and
okay.
I guess this woman goes back to the same spot each year. And this moray eel has his territory, and he just recognizes her and comes out each time.
Huh.
So it's quite interesting.
Kerry, did any moray eel ever hug you when you were down there?
No, but when I used to just freeze. You know, I'd see him go over my head. I mean, these things were huge, and
yeah. They
got a set of teeth that probably make a shark look like nothing. Yeah.
They are quite intimidating.
I always wondered, you know, I figured I'd give you guys a buzz and find out.
Yeah,
but I'm not going to go hugging them.
No, good. Good plan, because we need you on the show to call in fairly often. So thanks, Kerry.
Thanks. Bye.
Have a good one. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. So in the Pioneer Valley Aquarium Society, first of all,
yes.
How many members?
We're actually the largest aquarium club in in the Northeast, with the exception of the Long Island and the New Jersey clubs.
Yeah.
And we're basically the only game in town for freshwater between Rutland, Vermont, Danbury, Connecticut, Worcester, and Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, what would you say, 70, 80 members?
Wow.
Maybe officially, official members. At any given meeting, probably around 30 members show up.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. You mentioned freshwater. Are there such things as saltwater aquariums?
Yes, there's. In fact, there's a saltwater club in Albany, the Capital District Marine Aquarium Association. I don't have any experience with it myself. None of us actually are. Jacob's the only one with a saltwater tank, and he's got one.
Yeah. What do you have in there? Any more AELs? Anything?
No, I have everyone's favorite, the little clownfish.
Ah,
everyone loves Nemo, so we made sure to get that. And it's just a little 12-gallon that he has his rain of the little tank and, you know, a few little shrimp and snails.
Well, nice.
And, yeah, it's in our club. There's not very many. We did just get a couple members yesterday that actually that's what they have is saltwater tanks. And so we're looking forward to maybe even gleaning some knowledge from them.
Terrific. Let's go back to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. Jesse and Troy. Jesse, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 10-gallon fluval edge tank, which is kind of enclosed on all sides with glass, has a glass top. It's a little bit different looking. But one of the kind of side effects of that is that it's difficult to clean. And then on top of that, I've got it planted with a lot of live plants. So I guess I'm wondering if you've got any tips or tricks to particularly siphoning so that I'm not dislodging my plants every time I go in there to try to clean.
Sure. Do you have a turkey baster?
I do not, but I could get one.
Yeah, you might want to look into that. Something, you know, long enough to get to the areas you want to clean. Especially with the smaller tanks like that, that's the easiest way to just, you know, stick your turkey baster in there and suck out the gunk. And then, you know, once it's clean enough, if you're just doing a water change, then it's easier to just take out maybe a cup of water from the top to replace it with.
Right. Okay. That sounds great.
Yep.
Thanks, Jesse. Appreciate it. Michael, you wanted to weigh in on that?
Well, actually, I use old school under gravel filters.
Okay.
Which is a system that's kind of fallen into disfavor because when they work fantastic. When they don't work, they fail spectacularly.
Yeah.
But I find that basically the gravel keeps itself clean, but every couple of months what I do is I have to suck water out from under the under gravel filter plates, and then mud comes out. I just do it until it runs clear, and that keeps the gravel in the planting area clean. And That's about all I can weigh in. Actually, the most avid underwater gardener of us here is Jacob, so he's the one.
Okay.
I defer to him.
All right, let's go to Kelly in Newburgh. Kelly, you're on.
Hi, yes. I have a question about bubblers in the fish tank. I have, in the past, had bubblers where they have that really pretty stream of tiny little bubbles that come up, and it, you know, you can almost do like a little wall of it or whatever. And my current fish tank, which I've had for many years now, I can't get that nice stream of teeny bubbles. They come out like big blub, blub kind of bubbles. Mm. Unless I use, I've used, you know, like a parasite guard or something like that, where there are those fizzy tablets, and you drop it in the water, and then the bubbler does those tiny little bubbles. But that's the only time it does it. And if I change, you know, you're supposed to do a water change after you use that medicine. And when I do the water change, the bubbles go back to the blub, blub, blub.
Hmm.
So I was curious if you had any kind of reason that I don't have success with the bubblers.
Okay. This one I'll field because I use the old-fashioned filters that use the air stones and the air diffusers. What you do is you have to look for one. You go to your local mom-and-pop pet stores. We actually each have our own group of favorites. You know, in Northampton, South Hadley, Albany, they're everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the mom and pops are really the best place to go because they're usually run by real aficionados. Ask for a fine air stone or fine air diffusers. If you just go into, you know, a big department type store,
mm-hmm.
and you'll probably end up with a coarse air stone. And they make the big blub, blub, blub bubbles. But you can get very fine air diffusers that do produce the fine bubble streams. I personally prefer those myself.
Okay, but why would the same bubbler work well having fine bubbles with the medicine in there, but if the medicine's not in there, it's the same bubbler the whole time?
This might be a physics question.
Well, I was thinking about that. When you're adding the medicine, you said it was like an antibacterial or something like that?
Yeah, or parasite guard. They're like these fizzy tablets. And actually, I was looking at the back of the package, and it says that if you have soft water, which I do not, I have very hard water with a lot of calcium. If you need to dissolve it prior to putting it into the tank or whatever. So I didn't know if it was like a hard water versus soft water kind of thing, or...
It sounds like there's something going on. It sounds like the medicine is actually causing some sort of reaction, or perhaps maybe removing material that's within the diffuser. But that's definitely something that's kind of interesting. You could definitely do an experiment based on that.
Aha!
Also, some of the medicines behave almost like a soap. I just treated one of my tanks with a Melaleuca, tea tree solution, and suddenly I was getting a different bubble pattern.
Yeah.
It changes basically the way the water works. It changes the
viscosity.
Yes, it changes the viscosity of the water, and that's basically what's happening with yours.
All right, we got to take a break here. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. E. Michael Silikowski is here. Jacob Guanasso and Tony Gee from the Pioneer Valley Aquarium Society, and more of your questions coming.
Support for WAMC comes from Epic 18 Vermont Artisans, Manchester Center, an artisan-owned and operated cooperative craft gallery honoring handmade traditions and contemporary design. EPOCHVermont.com. Inspire Design and Build, a fully custom remodeling, home addition, and new construction company located in Saratoga Springs, offering design consultation and estimates. InspireDesignAndBuild.com. In Washington County Tourism and the towns and villages therein, featuring independently owned specialty shops for local holidays, shopping, gift certificates, and more, WashingtonNYCounty.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Aquarium science, aquarium building, carrying for slippery sea creatures. I tell you, this is a much more popular show than I thought it would be. In fact, I'm dumbfounded by how many calls we had. But you guys were quite confident coming in.
Well, we've got the experience, and we love our hobby.
And you said it was you made a great point during the break. It's a solitary hobby, and a lot of people don't know that a lot of people like it.
Oh, very true. I mean, I was always the lone fish keeper. And then when I went to my first aquarium club meeting back in January, I was just amazed. And then I went to my first auction, and there was all these people who were breeding and auctioning off fish that I had only seen in books. And
they auction fish?
Oh, yes.
Isn't there some sort of federal regulation against this?
Oh, no. In fact, I've even seen fish that are on the endangered species list, even ones that are extinct in the wild that are being propagated by aquarists, and they show up at the auction.
That's got to be illegal, right?
No, it's not, because actually the Aquarium Club just joined a group called CARES, C-A-R-S. I have it written down in my coat. It's conservation awareness, recognition, encouragement, and support. And it's basically a conservation organization that's dedicated to the propagation of threatened and endangered fishes. And when you join the Aquarium Club, you're supporting an environmental organization.
Wow. Amazing. Okay. So people will put coelacanths in their aquariums and whatnot?
Only if it's a public aquarium. Mm-hmm. Those are about 6 feet long.
Well,
But I think I will say, Jacob, you have the date and the location for our auction.
Oh, you have an auction coming.
And it's open to the public.
We do have an auction. All welcome to attend. It's going to be on February 22nd, Pioneer Valley Aquarium Society annual auction. It'll be at
The Knights of Columbus in Chicopee.
Cool. That's and right. do you have a website where people can find out more?
Pioneer Valley Aquarium Society will come up on a search engine. Do not punch in PVAS. You'll get the Potomac Valley Aquarium
Society.
Oh,
boy. And you know, it's like Macy's and Gimbel's. I'm sure there's a big rivalry there.
Actually, no. It's just that it's such a long distance to their meetings.
They're from back in D.C.
Yeah.
The short form is just PVAS.net. That is our website.
Oh, you did? Oh.
Fair
Good.
Enough. All right, well done. Let's go to Stu in Great Barrington. Stu, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Michael, I know you. I don't know the other two.
Oh, I know. This is Stu, the proprietor of Fin and Feather.
All right.
Yeah. I have a suggestion for the woman that was talking about her goldfish.
All right.
Driving around. I service fish tanks all the time. As far as her filters go, I think she could still use the filters, but I would recommend, and it's funny because you mentioned an undergravel filter. Undergravel filters work great, especially for goldfish because of the biological activity that goes on. That would really be helpful for her. Doesn't work well for koi because they dig up the undergravel all the time. But for fantails, it's fabulous. What I also would recommend, she said that she has problems with her water quality. So goldfish like a high pH. With a little bit of salt in the water. So an addition of some dolomite or crushed coral to the gravel would stabilize the pH quite a bit for goldfish and eliminate the problems as far as the acidity in the tank. So that would be very helpful for her. Somebody asked about the air stones losing, they're changing the...
Yeah, going from little bubbles to big bubbles.
Yeah, if she used... plastic air wand, that would be, they clog up sooner, but they have a tendency to be finer, or even a wooden air stone that's used for salt water. Both of those will work. So that's just a few of suggestions that I heard while I was traveling around while I'm taking care of these fish tanks.
Thanks, Stu. Appreciate you checking in.
Yeah. Bye, Mike.
Take care. Stu, you actually beat me to the punch. I was going to give a shout-out as one of the proprietors of one of the mom-and-pops that we like to patronize.
All right.
Stu is the proprietor of Fin and Feather on Tyler Street in Pittsfield.
Thanks, Stu. We appreciate the call. Let's go to Chris in Northampton. Chris.
Hey, just following up on a comment about the moray eel.
Yeah, hugging and whatnot.
Well, there's actually a couplet that explains that they're not actually safe. I don't know if you've heard it. It goes, if that eel bites your thigh like a big pizza pie, that's a moray.
Hey, you've been waiting a long time for that one. Well played.
Maybe never heard that before. Huh?
Good job. So, thanks, Chris.
Thought you would want that. Okay.
That's a good one.
It's greatly appreciated. I thought that myself.
A little aquatic humor. Very little. Beth in Croton Harmon. Wow, you're in.
Thanks. I'm calling because I have a toddler who recently expressed an interest in fish. We have a limited amount of space in our house, but I'd like to get him something that he might enjoy. Do you have any advice?
I'm going to field this one because I started as, a kindergartner. I would say start with a small actual aquarium setup. Don't go for just the little tiny things you see advertised on TV, Mr. Betta or whatever like that. Start with like a 5 or a 10-gallon tank.
What if they don't have room for that?
You can usually find they come in different shapes now. There's so many different little tanks now that are available. I'm amazed at the variety of them. But do get one that has a heater, a light, and a filter, and a little bit of gravel. And I will give one piece of advice to anybody who's starting off. A lot of people start off with the rainbow or neon-colored gravel and the plastic plants because people have told them that, this is much more low maintenance. Start with some natural colored gravel and get some live plants. For a beginner, something with broad leaves is usually easier than the feathery looking plants. But put some live plants in and you'll have yourself a natural ecosystem that your child will not become sick of, and you will be giving your kid a real boost in interest in the natural sciences.
Great.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks.
Bye now. 1-800-348-2551. And one or two open lines here if you want to jump in. We have about 10 minutes left with our show today. Let's go to Lynn in Shelburne. Lynn, you're on.
Thank you so much for taking my call, as usual. Sure. Yes, I have an aquarium. It's a 54 Beaufront. And if you don't mind, I'd take a couple little tiny questions.
Sure.
But in the back of the little holding tank that goes down to the filter, there's Well, there's a coolie loach down there, and I can't seem to get him out. Is there anything you could suggest to me? But, you know, there's a little pipe coming up from the corner, and it just is very hard to get down there. Anything besides a turkey baster?
What type of filter is this you have? Is it a hand?
Under, like a sump. Underneath filter with the media in it, and,
A canister?
No, it's a sump.
Oh, it's a sump.
It drains down to a tank below, right?
Oh, the refuge.
I don't know. Is that a canister? I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds like a sump. Where is it stuck?
In the holding tank behind the, in the corner, with the corner.
So the overflow.
Graham, sorry.
Okay. That's kind of a tricky spot.
It is.
I don't think a turkey baster would work in this case.
A small siphon.
Yeah, possibly a small siphon.
Big enough for the fish to fit it.
Yeah, you might be able to find like a small net. I mean, it sounds like it's an enclosed area, so maybe one of the shrimp nets, because they won't really be able to run around all that much. You just might be able to like coerce them out and just pop them back in. It's kind of a tricky spot that...
It definitely is, and I've emptied it out down to about an inch, and it's still hard to see the little guy.
Hmm.
I'll try that. That's very good. I'll try to siphon them out. I've got this brown mossy stuff in the bottom of my aquarium, and, well, I'm not really good at doing aquarium cleanings, but my fish certainly like it. They live. They're fine in there. But it's looking pretty messy, and it's hard to get rid of it. Do you suggest what do you know about it?
Brown mossy stuff? Like, is it stuck to the gravel? Like, it's growing on the substrate?
Yeah, it's growing on the rocks and on the plants. And
oh, hair algae.
No, this is brown, but yeah.
Hair algae. Yeah, that stuff.
Brush allergies.
A lot of the thing with... I recently had a bout of that myself.
Okay. In your fish tank?
In my fish tank.
Okay, all right. Just to be clear. All right.
You'd be amazed what that nail fungus stuff does.
Let's just move on.
You cleared it right up.
Right.
The brown hair algae and the black hair algae actually are an indication that you've got too much phosphates in your water.
Oh.
Up your water changes to at least, you know, how do you do, like 25% every week or 25%
every 2 weeks? No, I do 25% every 3 months.
I'd say do 25% a week.
Okay.
For a while.
And and actually on a regular basis to keep it from coming back. And in the meanwhile, there is one type of fish that eats it. You can go to most pet stores and they sell it as the Siamese algae eater.
Wow.
Or the Siamese flying fox.
A community aquarium.
Oh, no, this is not to be confused with that fish from Thailand that is generally called the Chinese algae eater. That is a member of the sucker family, and it's aggressive. It's
Siamese algae.
But the one that you want is called the Siamese algae eater, sometimes called the Siamese flying fox.
Okay.
And what happens if she cleans the water and then the Siamese algae eater has nothing to eat?
Oh, it'll eat regular fish food. They're very happy.
Okay.
They're
all
happy.
Right.
They're happy little guys.
And the other thing is, my stone is probably full of this spores and stuff.
Oh, that stuff just spreads. It spreads by, you know, division. It's an algae, not a sporing plant. And the Siamese algae eater will clean it all up while you're removing its food supply, and then he'll keep it from coming back.
Beautiful.
Cool.
Or she, which, you know, you can't really tell the genders.
Okay.
Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to Caitlin in Kingston. Caitlin.
Hello.
Hello.
I work at a small environmental center on the Hudson River, and we have about 10 tanks that we take Hudson River fish and keep them for educational purposes. So I was wondering if you had advice about building tanks from wild-caught fish, in particular how to deal with some parasites that come up, we guess sometimes.
I'm gonna put in a plug. This is not any advertising for a place in the
area.
This
is public radio.
Oh, I know, but there's one place that you should know of. In fact, anybody who keeps fish, especially unusual fish and wild-caught fish, go to a place called, just punch into a search engine, Peabody's Paradise.
Right.
It's a pond supply store in Florida, and they sell medicated foods that will knock out the most persistent parasites. And you'll have to you'll have to deal with them on the computer, because if you call the phone number that they provide for the site, it's 867-5309.
So no way, for like the song.
Yeah, so it's obviously somebody in there has a sense of humor. You can't actually get through on that number.
Okay,
but Peabody's,
you tried.
Yes, I tried. Right. Peabody's Paradise sells medicated foods that you cannot get from other places, and they will knock out wild parasites. And if you're keeping native fish, that's a major concern.
All right. Caitlin, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Jules in Woodstock. Jules. Hello. Who is this on the fin? Are you there? Jules? Jails? It's Jules, right? Jules is not there. All right, Jules, call back. Let's go to Raina in Cooperstown.
Yeah, good job. I'm calling about a turtle. She's a painted turtle about the size of a hand. I have a couple questions. Does she like a lot of water or gravelly water with not so much water? And does she like it clean or dirty? I've heard some people say they really like it mucked up. She seems to like it clean, but I'd like to get a professional.
I'm pretty sure the turtles are going to want it as clean as possible. That's just more of a health thing, because having dirty water wouldn't be a benefit for them. So you want to keep that as clean as possible. And for the water level, I think painted turtles are an aquatic turtle. Yes. So you want to give them some room to swim around in. Perhaps not necessarily an entire tank full, because you want to have them give them areas that they can lay out on, bask out on, underneath a heat lamp or something like that. So you definitely want to give them some water to swim around in and play in, all that stuff. But yeah, definitely keep it clean.
Great. I have one more question.
Sure.
I bought her a bunch of feeder fish and she didn't eat three, and they somehow became pets. Why would she not want to eat feeder fish? Was she just lonely?
I had some red sliders, which are, you know, southern relatives of those, when I was about 11 or 12. And they never ate any fish. They left the fish alone. Actually, mine were quite comfortable eating fish food. I've even known people who fed their sliders, cooters, and painted turtles dog food. They like meaty food, and fish are just a little bit more work than they like to.
So they're lazy.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, why chase down a wild turkey, right, when you can pick up a butterball at the supermarket?
Sure, absolutely. So, Raina, have you ever decided to give the turtles meatloaf?
She likes ham and turkey.
They would probably like meatloaf. I'd be just go light on the onions.
Yeah, that's a good plan. Okay, well, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you. Bye now.
So we're just about out of time, and I'm kidding here. You really don't want to feed fish meatloaf and table scraps, right?
If it's meaty, you can get away with it with the bigger cichlids. And I wouldn't give my own cichlids. I will say this. I've been waiting all show to say this.
Oh boy.
All of us, the tone of an aquarium is very much attuned to the owner. There's something for everybody. Those who like flower gardens would like guppies and killifish. And by the way, this is the perfect area to explain killifish, because killifish is from the Dutch for stream.
Creek.
Every stream around here ends with kill.
Sure.
So these are little African and South American brightly colored fish. They're perfect for flower gardeners, and guppies appeal to those. Cichlids, which we all keep, are like bird watching in your living room. Rich Guthrie, when he does the bird show,
yeah,
he would love cichlids, because we keep them for their behaviors. They display. They have territorial.
They have personality?
Yes,
really?
They do. In fact, I was going to say the tone of our tanks. Jacob's tank has a substrate of potting. Most of them have a substrate of potting soil, and it's like the mood is butterfly conservancy. Beautiful little fish flitting through dense foliage. Tony's tanks with sand bottom, it's like a Three Stooges marathon. If they had fingers, they'd be poking each other in the eye.
Well,
and
great.
Mine, I have Amazonian dwarf cichlids.
Of course.
And they, there's hundreds of species of them. And the mood is telenovela on Telemundo on mute. Hissy fits, slap fights, posing and posturing and a little bit of Game of Thrones. There's been an epic duel to the death going on in my tank for 3 months now, and it will end when they die of old age.
And that is where this program ends. And by the way, what a bizarre, bizarre way to end the show. Thank you all very much for being here. Michael Silikowski, Tony Guy, and Jacob Guanasso. And boy, that was a lot of fun. I learned a lot here from the Pioneer Valley Aquarium Society. Thanks for joining us today. Support comes from Interim Healthcare, offering support for families during the holidays and year-round with companions, aides, or nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day, serving the Capital Region, Saratoga Counties, Glens Falls, and Columbia, interimhealthcare.com. And Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, legal and consulting services on regulatory issues for life insurance and annuity manufacturers and distributors, currancompliance.com. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for calling with your fish questions. And thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Your phones were answered by Bruce Herbach, our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Vox Pop, it's Astronomy with Bob Berman. Stay tuned now for a news update.